I would like to give you a rough overview about how the whole concept we have about long-term preservation, like a national library, and what we have as a vision for the cooperative platform of the libraries in Hungary, where we came to until now. So what is the perception we are having, what questions we raise, and what technical solutions we are looking at. And as you are aware, we had looked at different vendors and different solutions, how you solve this problem. But I would like to give you a more overall, a general introduction to the question what we have. And basically, being a national library, of course, we are going back far away into the past, where we had the same functions as we have today, that we just collect whatever we can. And this is basically a big shift, because earlier we had just certain limited amount of scarce or very rare materials. These days we collect much bigger amount of data, what we also digest or process. And of course, we promote it to the wider audience. Earlier it was a much more restricted audience. These days we aim to have the whole world as having the World Wide Web. We really want to go much further. And I think what we are talking today is how we preserve it for us for an infinite time. And this is a big question today, what we call infinite, how far we can keep data and how far it's reasonable to keep data. And I think the big change was that the information we had was a sort of very restricted one, a closed initiates and some people who were accessing the data and the knowledge, but was a very valuable and still is a valuable source of power, influence, and all this stuff what we, and these were mostly privileged people who had this knowledge, but we want to open it up, and from strictly protected or copyrighted materials, we want to serve as much as possible publicly available. So basically, that's also a question. What we collect, that's what we will preserve. So again, this is a question, what is the scope we are talking about today? And of course, this changed completely. If you look at the library these days and you looked earlier, these are still institutions where you can make a concentrated work. So you come here as a building, into the building, and you work. If you look at this picture, I love it very much, that people are not consuming information, but really dive in and create new ones. So everyone sitting at those desks are writing something. So basically, they take the information and they transform it. I think that's the most important message of a library, that it's not only a vast amount of information you provide, but you are also provide a space where people can come together and work with that. And I think what we realize today, the access of the information is not anymore tied to the library. So if you think it's only your privilege to serve people with information, that's much more open these days. And the main message is to share all this information. And not only us, libraries are sharing this information, but many other institutions together. So it's basically a shift, which, again, I like to show this picture very often, that is basically the whole mind shift in the society to go from a private, closed thing to a much more open, transparent, cooperative, and experimentative model is a completely new situation where libraries has to make a big jump to fulfill this sort of new situation, that we come to a different network as we used to have, like hierarchies earlier. Now it's a network of cooperative entities. So again, what we see in the data that we see in organizations, that they are much more sort of independent individual entities who work together and cooperate. This is a very interesting drawing of the IT situation these days. I would like to emphasize five things from this. One very important element is structuring the information, because we have machine-generated, basically unstructured information what is surrounding us. And as the biggest task these days is structure it, make it sort of context-related, basically meaningful or semantic. So this is one of the biggest challenges. Automated knowledge generation is very widespread. So basically, it's not only humans who are generating knowledge these days, but also machines from different sources, and they combine information. Again, we have to judge if it's something valuable for us. We want to take care of this, or we just concentrate so far from the sort of human-related information or generated information. Artificial intelligence, I will talk about this later as well. We made a part of a project which is dealing these sort of questions, but definitely it's a big trend in IT these days, where libraries have also big sort of opportunities to take on and use it. Publishing, it's much more dynamic as it used to be. So basically, if you have a collection or a context, you can individualize the collection and the context what you want to serve for the public. And also as a user, you have much more options to take what you are really interested in. And the new relations within the social media and social networks make possible that this information can flow and many people can be informed. So it's basically a ways of cooperation is unlimited these days. And how IT solves it, it's basically many, many different applications, thousands of them, what we all know, and we live in these applications. And how they can work together, that means each one of these applications has a very specific task, and these are interconnected with each other. So basically, it's a microservices architecture with very modular approach and very flexible to use and interconnect. And that's basically how we should proceed in the libraries. We have to go away from the monolithic big systems, and we want to break down each individual task very much, but making it very talkative to other systems. So basically, that they are interconnected and standard interfaces can communicate with each other. But to make every unit as small as possible and as individual as possible. I'm just mentioning the growth of data because we would think it's a minor issue. It's not. If you want to think in cataloging terms these days, it's not enough anymore that the National Library catalogers could catalog all the information we are receiving. But we have to face the fact that basically the data what we are producing in the world is extremely growing. And as I mentioned already, it's unstructured. The data what we produce, the amount and the quantity of data what we produce today is probably 10% is structured and 90% is unstructured. And again, a big challenge is it's machine generated. So it's not only humans who are basically producing this vast amount of information and data. And this building we are in is holding all the collections and holding all the books. And earlier, as we could say, here in this building, we, as the National Library, have everything. Now we cannot say that anymore, because here is not here. It's somewhere in the cloud for the technical and digital collections. We is not the National Library anymore. It's really a consortium of many different institutions working together. And everything means quite a good selection of a big amount of data, but it's definitely not everything anymore. So it's a huge mind shift also in our thinking that we have to make sure that we can cooperate with others and share our functions, what we are having as a National Library. Here is just a very brief overview about what central shared functions we have now, and it's a lot. It's basically many, many different areas, copyright information, namespaces, digital collections, and a big amount of other services. Here are some more. And I think in each area, we have to make sure that we have the same cooperation model, that libraries and other institutions can cooperate with us. We made an alliance with other libraries. 16 libraries signed an agreement that we would like to have a national platform where we can work together. So here it is, what we came up with. These are the different functions what we defined for a national library platform. And if you see down there, there is also the long-term preservation, which we want to share with libraries. It's not only our responsibility to prepare the data, to maintain and keep the data, but we want to have a model of this where other libraries can contribute and other libraries can use all this, what is in there. The most important thing is how libraries can cooperate in this model, and there are many levels of cooperation which are possible. The best is if a library decides to move into this cloud-based platform and everything what is in there as a shared software is used by the library. So you can switch off your entire infrastructure and entire collections. You can move all your data here and maintain everything very centrally. Also the catalog and also your namespaces and all other data what you have. It's very important that it's your private data. You can share part of it if you want it, but you are very flexible to keep whatever you prefer to keep separated and isolated. The other level is that you contribute to the central database, upload your data or synchronize it in a real-time manner, but you don't move in. You keep your own ILS, whatever you have, or infrastructure, and you just exchange data and you provide and share data with us. The other much less interactive thing is just that you have your interfaces, your connectors. You don't upload data, but you still have the connection. You can connect, link your data and collections. And the less intensive is if you have your local database, you keep your data and your whole workflows and procedures for yourself. But we can see that you are there. We can see that you have these collections. So basically, we have in our catalog an access to your database. So you are basically remote and isolated, but still there is a gate from us to you. What I like the most is down there, the support from other non-institutional entities, like researchers, scientists, who are capable and very knowledgeable in certain areas of their field, that they can contribute to these collections. We introduced a system, or we designed a system, where anyone who is entitled to do this can upload data, maintain data on a certain level. So we introduced quality levels. If you are not a knowledgeable or trustworthy person, you can still do it, but your data, what you input or ingest into the system, is a sort of low-level quality. But the library can pick it up and bring it to a higher level, so authenticate your data and take your data to their collection. So there are many levels of cooperation, which is very well organized. The only new generation system which is on the market now, or is it becoming and getting to the market, is the Folio Community. Also, the names tells you that it's an open future. The future of libraries is open. And it has this infrastructure which allows to you that you can have the flexibility and individuality in the software and also in the data, but you can have a very complex solution where you can include everything. In a certain case, you see that the drawing here tells you that you have a system layer where the infrastructure is, where you can have all kind of infrastructure you want to connect with a software instance. OCAPI is the messaging layer where you can send data and receive data in very standard form, but any kind of data. It could be BibFrame, Dublin Core, whatever. All types of data, no limitations there. And all the applications sitting in this system are language agnostic. So in any programming language, you can create modules which are capable of talking to each other through OCAPI. And on the top sits the user interface where you can define your own look, your own logo, your own color, whatever, that you look very unique in the system, but you are still a member of a very complex and integrated story. This is very important that you can take advantage of complexity and also individual freedom in your collections. Last month, there was a big conference in the US, the World of Open Libraries, where 190 people are sitting in this room. They are mostly different working groups in Folio. How Folio works, it's a concept of special interest groups. That means in each individual subject, people are coming together, working together, and developing metadata standards or archiving standards or whatever, all kinds of fields. And it's very important that it's an open one. So if you go to the homepage of Folio, you can immediately see all documentation, all roadmaps, all achievements, And you can download the whole system from GitHub. It's already a version there which you can freely use without paying anything. It's an open source, not even product, it's an open source solution of a community. It's coming to a phase where 16 institutions, including the National Library, are very interested to use this system in the foreseeable future. So there is a group which is called Early Implementers. This is a photo where we sat together in this room, 16 different institutions, mostly American institutions, who want to go live with Folio quite soon. There are quite a few Americans. There are from Europe, it's the Swedish Chalmers University, which would like to go live very soon in January. And there is a German group who is developing Folio very actively, and also the Hungarian Library, who is part already from the beginning of this community. And we are supporting with ideas, requirements, what we would like to see here. The method was here always to have a look what is already there on the market. So we are now archiving stuff. This is Special Collections and Archives, a working group within Folio. This is a huge Excel sheet, which is just a part of it I'm showing. A huge list of existing solutions for archiving special collections and different archive materials. And what Folio does, have a look. They have a look, or we have a look, at certain institutions, what they are using, what software is there, and analyzing different aspects of those. Here are just some that you can read. I made a bigger version, or a bigger readable version of that. So it's analyzing how it is dealing with import and export, how does it do the batch processing, its community support around it, and so on and so forth. And out of these experiences, they will talk to those guys who are doing this software and try to see what type of cooperation is possible. And if there is an existing software for this purpose, Folio community would take it and transform it into a more contextual Folio module. I just mentioned some of the developments already done in Folio. It's very important whatever is done there, it's across all the modules. For example, if you want to tag or add information, enrich information, you can do it everywhere. If you have a tagging system which is working in loans, you can tag also some user management data, or you can tag your collections, whatever. So it's basically a very flexible solution always, which is parameterizable, that you can set up your system and you can use the same function across all the modules. For example, the language you can choose, of course, for each user, for each individual person using it, or it detects even where you are and what sort of context you are coming from, and it will tell you sort of what language you are using. Very briefly about the metadata management, it's very interesting. It's gone away from MARC, which is a very linear description of data. It's not anymore. MARC was basically a very big invention, moving from catalogs to the technical world, like an exchange format, machine-readable code. But it's not anymore paying attention to the changes in the IT world, so it's not really handling very much the entity-relation type of data. So it's basically time to replace it, and Folio does. The internal format of Folio is very close to BibFrame 2, not identical, but BibFrame 2.0, but very close to it. So if you look at these drawings, this is a module which is a BibFrame 1, and storage also, the data and the catalog, is stored in BibFrame. And it's very, very much connected to the inventory, the storage, basically, and the knowledge base. So that's how it is working there. If you install Folio, you can use your own local language, of course. So there is also a translation tool which is used by colleagues. And this makes it very flexible to use any language. The challenge, of course, solved by BibFrame is the one which we have in front of us, that if you have a work with many variations, after a while it's not the original work anymore, even if it was a copy, but a changed version, abbreviated version, translated version, you have to cope with this. So you basically have to cover that you can describe all these internal relations, you still find the relevant information, but you have basically a possibility to describe and connect. And of course, you use the open link data vocabularies, which are already there. There are many, so it's advisable to use existing ones and to contribute to those and build the existing connections and vocabularies. I don't want to talk long about how we come from Mark to BibFrame, but just to mention the idea, it's just the picture is just showing you how the resources description and access as a cataloging standard, BibFrame as an exchange data exchange model or data exchange format, and how the library standard works together. There are many things to clarify, but I think it's one important thing to remember. It took 52 years now to use Mark. No, we will not have that much periods. If we introduce BibFrame these days, it will take much longer than, much shorter time to replace it with something new. So I think the change, the acceleration in the new methodology in IT will make it happen also in the libraries that whatever you do now, it won't be the same what you do tomorrow. So I think we have to be prepared that we have new systems in place. So this is just a brief overview that they are interconnected and they really take care of each other's concepts, which is the main philosophy being the functional relationship model, FRBR, connecting entities through connections, basically describing the connections of those entities. And how you go from Mark to BibFrame, you just extract the entities and you build the connections. And if you want to publish it, you just do it like generating triple stores or triplets like RDF. This is just models how you can, with many, many different sources, you can extract data and you build your own data model afterwards in many different ways. I'm just mentioning here Aliada, which was a project where also Hungarian institutions were part of it. It's an open source software which is capable of publishing data in the semantic web. And this is just the last picture about how you build clusters of entities, different names, works, relators, and so on, and how you connect them via APIs. And I'm very proud that 2.5 years ago we did a conversion of the whole MOCA, the Hungarian National Catalog, into BibFrame. And this is one of the pictures. It's still available on the net. It's an old version, 2.5 years old. We didn't correct too many data, but it's there. So you can have a look how our database looks like if you connect it to different outside databases and namespaces. The breaking news is that there is a library in the world since last week, Monday. That's the Swedish National Library, who went live with BibFrame. In their national catalog, they don't store Mark anymore. That's very surprising, I think. I was impressed. They took 5 years to develop in-house their own system, which is doing this. So they have an online catalog where you catalog in BibFrame, and everyone in Sweden has to catalog in BibFrame in this case. There's a central one without duplicates, and they store everything in BibFrame. If they receive information from outside, in Mark21, of course, because the libraries still run Mark21, they convert it into BibFrame, and if they have to deliver data, they convert it from BibFrame to Mark21. But that's there. I was there, I believed, I seen it. So it's a big, big step in library history that there is some library, national library and national catalog who took this big step and has proven that BibFrame is capable of replacing Mark. So whatever we do in this project, whatever the results are, these are shared results. So basically whatever we produce, like software code, like framework, like vocabularies, that's there for everyone. So the message is from us, if we do an whatever type of archive, what we are talking about archiving as a platform for archiving stuff, that will be open for everyone. So that means if anyone moves into this platform, can use the storage and archiving their data, they can use the system and have their private data and shared data. But it's very important that we are not building for the National Library alone, but we are building for the community of libraries who are open to come in and work with us together. And of course, in this case, also in digitization, we would like to have a platform which is not so close connected to the library platform, but we would like to create a platform which is capable of sharing the workflows and sharing the results and sharing the plans, of course. There is also a plan that we can, as libraries, can publicize our plans, what we would like to digitize to avoid duplication of work. And I think that's also very important, the cataloging, that if you use a central system like this, you can avoid duplicates, you can avoid duplicated effort, and you can streamline your processes. But this system allows variations. Whatever you upload or you want to share, there is always, in your statement, is written who is stating this. So you can have your whatever strange individual statements in there without alterations. So whatever you want to share with the world in your form, that's available. There will be no sort of unification of data. There will be always the possibility that you have your individual sort of catalog entry or digitized book, your version of digitized book, and so on and so forth. I'm very proud that in the process of the Folio work, we added quite a few functions which are very specific at first in the National Library, but having a closer look to it, it was obvious that it's very useful in the world. So we had this is the slide which shows you what sort of things we introduced to Folio, and I think this is very nice that there will be certain realization of these. And before I close, I just want to show two examples in the project which are very sort of unique, not so important features of Folio, but I think very important ones. The one is a cataloging issue where we did, as a part of the project, a very flexible sort of cataloging possibility, where we had a look at properties, what you describe, and this is not only library stuff, anything in the world, you want to describe anything. We just distilled on a high abstraction level what sort of data we are dealing with. So these are different categories we created. And out of that, we synthesized it in the knowledge representations like schemas that you can, with different attributes, you can create schemas for your description. And what is very important, that here you are completely free what and in what sort of type of data you describe and what connections you define, like parent-child relations. So you can create any flexibility of a data model. But we created also the function that you can catalog in BibFrame, you can catalog in Marc or Dublin Core, whatever you choose. We make a help that you basically map your fields into existing exchange formats. And here is just a drawing about how you do it with Marc 21, that from that the record heading or other data elements with fixed length can be generated automatically. So it's basically a feature where you are completely free, individually free, but still you can have a connection to the existing data standards and formats. And the other project part was, and that's very important for archiving stuff and retrieving stuff, artificial intelligence, face recognition is very widespread in the world already. There are many open source components that you can do it. But if you are searching in a huge digital library for someone, photos of anyone who is important for you, that it's a very easy tool to use, that you can basically automatically recognize faces and teach the machine how the identifier of your namespace is linked to that sort of person who is on the picture, adding a name or ID to it. But also, there are many options here to teach the machine that it recognizes this face, but you can teach the machine that it goes much further than that. Going back to archives, we have a connection with Pickle. This is a Danish company who created the Arctic World Archive. You see some pictures here where they are. Some libraries already, Vatican and other libraries, took their precious sort of treasures, and Pickle made for them a sort of microfilm solution. It's a plastic thing They code, basically, whatever you have here in your library. They code and print it, basically print it on this celluloid. And they take it and hide it somewhere, which is safe for more probably centuries without electricity and anything. And also, the decoding methods are written on those sort of celluloids. So basically, anyone who will find later in 200 years these sort of encoded materials will be capable of retrieving the information, hopefully. There are some other Hungarians who are thinking about archives, and this is Satucek, Zoltán Satucek from the National Archive, who was having the same sort of picture with icebergs and talking about the Titanic, who was having this catastrophe because we ignored warnings. The captain didn't see the whole system, the whole complexity of the system. The crew didn't understand probably all the new technologies. And I think what he's saying here is very much in line with what the colleague said earlier. It's not a technical challenge. It's an organizational issue, how we think broadly in a concept and how we can acquire the newest technologies to fulfill the requirements. And I think, again, to emphasize, that's another guy who was thinking about digital preservation. He came to the same conclusion. If you don't share, if you don't give your data and you don't open up, you cannot preserve, really, your data. A very open system is next door. It's in Slovakia, the CDA, the Central Data Archive, is a huge one, 25 petabytes. And they are open to all institutions. That's a tape library. Whatever you bring in, they will transform like Archivum does. They are also using in the background the same software, Archivmatica, and transforming their stuff and retrieving that. And I think, again, to emphasize, digital preservation has not only the technology leg, it really has the resources, the people, and the organization in the background. And I think if we want to preserve, if you want to save, then we have to share in a very classified, identified, and authenticated manner that we have really reliable data, what we really take care of. And it's very important that whatever we get at the end is very transparent, shared, and available, and free for everyone. And talking about preservation, I'm very much hoping that in the whatever platform we will get, we will have a button which we can push, like the preservation button. And I'm really hope that this future of that preservation is very open, and it's really up to us what we really need and what we can fulfill. So I'm very glad that so many people are here interested in this sort of cooperation, and I think the presentation today will be successful, that we understand what options are there, and also the vendors will understand what options we really need. And in this hope, I thank you for your attention.